Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Hey.
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good, doing good. A little mix up on the show, but it's on the air right now.
Oh, terrific. That's great. Well, I want to say hi to our listening audience, whoever it may be out there.
Yeah, I agree. Listening audience is the most important thing right now. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, for those of you that don't know, my name's Joe Maricino, hence the nickname Cherry. I live in the Boston area. I'm 25, looking to start out as a sports journalist around this area. I've lived here all my life. I specialize in covering hockey, but I am very opinionated on all the major sports.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm just stunned that they actually gave me my own show again. I mean, last time I had a show, my ratings bombed so bad that I thought this could never happen again. So.
we'll try to improve on it this time, Chris.
It's about modesty. Well, it's always good when your co-host not half in the bag. But anyways, that being said, this is a sports show, and one of the big things that I think we need to talk about is the NFL. So do you think's going on with these players?
Yeah, you know, the NFL hasn't had a particularly good couple of weeks. I don't know if it's something in the water they're giving them or something like that, but, man, they have not had a good week at all.
No, they clearly have not. If you go down the list with a lot of the suspensions that's been occurring, seems like Josh Gordon's kind of the choir boy out of the whole deal. I mean, you got people beating women. You got people beating women and children. You've got, wow, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned Gordon, too, because I think there was a report that surfaced yesterday that he got his suspension cut down to 10 games, which is ironic if you think about it, because I was saying when the whole Ray Rice fiasco started that, I look back at Gordon's suspension and I thought, oh, okay, so a guy that gets caught smoking pot a few times gets suspended an entire year, while a guy that beats his wife up only gets 2 games. That, you know, that makes complete sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, it's kind of funny. You hit your wife, it's, 2 games, but you hit a bong, it's a whole year. It's interesting the way that works.
Yeah,
it is so backwards in all their, in all their punishments and policies. They're just really backwards. I don't know if you actually caught the Goodell press conference yesterday, but aside from Peter King being his professional fluffer, he didn't look too good. I mean, Peter King's questions were absolutely epic. So do you think the owners like you still? Yes. Do you think you're doing a good job? Yes. Really hard-hitting stuff by a professional journalist, I have to say. Really hard-hitting.
Man, I managed to catch a little bit of the highlights of it, but good Lord, a guy of Peter King's caliber is asking questions like that. My God, those are softball questions right there.
Yeah, it's a question to keep you playing in the good graces of the NFL, which, by the way, still actually a professional lawyer who clearly would never lie and says, I never saw that tape. Sure you didn't.
There's no question he did. I think there was another report that I saw, well, that I heard about yesterday, saying that, most people in the Ravens front office and their security director actually were informed of what happened with Ray Rice and his now wife, Janae. It still doesn't look good for the NFL, even though Goodell came out and said that, oh, it's my fault, blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, this report comes out this morning that, the Ravens front office pleaded with Goodell to only give him a 2-game suspension, and Goodell obviously listened to them. So I mean, that shows you how much credibility I think the NFL has with regards to domestic violence.
Well, this is interesting, and you know, my apologies for this. It seems like we are having some technical difficulties.
It's that damn equipment, isn't it?
No, I'm actually in the elevator, and you know how it is when you're in an elevator and Ray Rice steps in there. Always got to be ready. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you listen to Howard Stern Show, but they actually had Benji from the Howard Stern Show as a special guest at that press conference. And
yes,
as soon as when they tried to kick him out, he was screaming, "Anywhere but the elevator, anywhere but the elevator, I don't want to go in the elevator."
You know what, Chris, I did hear about that. I thought that was probably the best part of a mainly softball press conference was Benji spicing things up a little bit.
Well, and the women will lighten up Goodell, and good for them. I mean, you know, Rachel Nichols over at ESPN lit him up. There was a bunch of other things. You know, TMZ actually nailed him with a good question where they stated how could they actually get the tape after one phone call and the NFL had a whole legal team. He didn't have an answer for that.
No, of course he doesn't have an answer, because what he doesn't understand is that TMZ has more money than the billion-dollar NFL does in order to obtain this tape. I mean, don't you have to think that he turned a blind eye to it from the beginning?
Absolutely. You know, for the good of the league, good for marketing. I mean, and not for nothing, Ray Rice's best carry was dragging his wife out of the elevator. Let's be honest, last year, he was terrible. That was probably the longest that he actually carried something. You know, why stick up for someone like that? The Ravens organization knew about it. Everyone knew about it, but yet, I don't know. You know, someone like Peterson, for instance, I mean, not defending the guy, what he did was terrible, but I would put it more akin to where Michael Vick was, where it was a cultural thing, he was brought up like that, and not, well, obviously you know right from wrong at a very young age, more so of a social upbringing. And that's what happened with him. Terrible thing. You know, you should know about these things, you should learn about these things, but I don't get it. You know, I don't get how people can lump him in with Jonathan Dwyer, who threw a shoe at his 18-month-old and, you know, headbutt and kicked the crap out of his wife on two separate occasions because she wouldn't have sex with him.
Yeah, and the best part is that both Dwyer and Peterson are both being paid while they're being suspended. I mean, that makes complete sense.
Oh, yeah, no. But Jonathan Dwyer is probably going to spend some time in this place called Tent City in the city of Maricopa, which I don't know if any of the listeners know about that. I mean, this is a nationwide show, mind you. But you might want to look up Tent City. That's not a fun place. The same sheriff over there, although he is very lenient on domestic abusers, the people in Tent City actually were fed green food. Now, what I mean by green food, it was kind of like gruel, but all the meat was taken out of it. So all it was processed veggies. And it was just it seems like a terrible, terrible place to be, especially since it's an outside jail in 110-degree weather without any AC. So, go figure.
Nice. That should be fun. Well, that'll be fun
now,
for him.
Yeah. Now, that being said, how do you think Roger Goodell should handle all this going forward? Do you think that should be something along the lines of a blanketed domestic abuse thing, or is this going to be like a case-by-case basis that he's going to handle this?
And you know what? That's a good question, because he did promise he was going to have some revamped policies by the Super Bowl to go into effect, I would guess, next year. If you ask me, I would think that, you know, domestic abuse cases are all the same, so I think it should be a general, it should be a blanketed It should be a separate category where it's a subsection of the personal conduct policy, and it should be that, you know, once they get arrested and formally charged with it, I think they should be suspended without pay until the case gets resolved. I mean, that's what I would do. If you're serious about tackling domestic abuse, that's the way to do it.
These players are handed everything. They're held in such a higher standard than the normal person out there. And in regards to that, you also have a trade-off. You have to be a role model. Even though you don't want to be one, you are considered a role model if a child is buying a shirt of yours. Now, I will say this. Out of every bad thing the NFL has had, the ESPN Network, also known as the SEC, Tebow, Manning, LeBron Network, they actually have not looked at one player, Devin Still. Devin Still, for anyone that doesn't know, is a practice squad player for the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, why he's important is this. Every single jersey that you buy at Devin Still, $100 goes towards pediatric cancer treatment. It's actually a really cool story with him. I guess his son has that type of cancer, and it's a terrible thing, but the Cincinnati Bengals actually kept him on the practice squad with pay to help pediatric cancer. That's probably the best story out of the NFL this year.
Oh, that's the runaway leader in the clubhouse right there. I think that's the one good thing the NFL and the Bungles got right is keeping Still on the team, and you know, encouraging fans and fans to buy his jersey. So I think that's good. That's definitely for a good cause.
Absolutely. And one of the great things about the NFL is the fact that it gives players chances to, you know, succeed. I mean, it gives players chances to kind of stand out. And I know, obviously, with before Tagliabue left, it was a lot different. I mean, right now it's the No Fun League. I mean, I think this year, instead of doing things with domestic violence, they were more harping on Jimmy Graham doing his little touchdown dance. I mean, I would call him Goodell a step down. This is absolutely, this is annoying. How can they actually have these players go out there next month, wear pink, and say that they're for breast cancer and, you know, for women's rights? They're not. The only way that they would be is if it's on tape or on social media. I mean, what happened with Terrell Suggs when he dragged his wife from his car with two kids in the back seat watching all this? What happened to him? He didn't miss any games. Greg Hardy got convicted of beating the crap out of his wife, didn't miss any games. Ray McDonald, it looks like he's going to be exonerated for whatever reason, even though it's without a shadow of a doubt he actually did this. It's ridiculous. And then you have an instance like Jameis Winston. He's going to go pretty high in the draft, I think, next year. He's going to be a first-round pick. I mean, it looks like that he's got some issues, too. Is that little rape charge from 2 years ago, it's a mess. You know, it's got to start from when they're in college and then work their way up in terms of having them handle themselves like a professional. You have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got no argument for me. I agree with you on all of them. I mean, I just think that, you know, that's going to be ironic next month. When the NFL does their breast cancer awareness promotion, and you know, how are the females going to react to that when, you know, they see all these players wearing pink and everything? I mean, that's going to be an interesting kind of response that you know the female contingent of NFL fans are going to give the league.
Right, and that's, you know, the problem too. I mean, even before, I mean, you go all across the leagues and, you know, the NFL just has the worst reputation right now. When it used to be, the NBA that used to have the goon reputation. I mean, Allen Iverson, for instance, with his whole practice rant, as funny as it is, I mean, was one of the poster boys for everything that was bad in the NBA in terms of media and in terms of advertisers. I don't have the exact list of the advertisers that's pulled out of the NFL. When Anheuser-Busch is considering pulling their money out, that's pretty big. I know that the owners love Roger Goodell and his $44 million salary because he kind of takes the heat off of them during CBA negotiations, but it's not good.
No, and I think the only reason the NFL is responding now and that Goodell has to come out is the threats that, you know, big time sponsors are going to pull out and withdraw their sponsorship to the NFL. I mean, that's obviously the only reason the NFL is going to come out. They have to defend their money, and they've got to please their sponsors and let them know if they're going to do all these things and implement these policies and everything like that just to keep these guys around. You know, it's kind of sickening when you think about it that the league still has the number one priority of keeping their sponsorship over there, the betterment of the players and their spouses.
I mean, 20 years ago, I don't think this would have gotten as much play. Now, 20 years later, obviously, we're in a generation where media and images and all that stuff can be found probably within 5 minutes of it occurring. Or, you know, TMZ can get it from pretty much anyone, pay them 10 grand for a video, and I think that's what happened with that cell phone clip that is being put around. Now, we've known about this Ray Rice thing since February, but why not act on it until now? And the reason is because people respond differently when they actually see it. You know, everyone knew that he hit his wife at the time, his fiance, in an elevator in a casino in New Jersey, but not a lot of people really cared because they didn't witness it. They did not see it. But seeing it happen, it's going to instill a greater response from everyone else. That's just my opinion on the matter. I mean, I think that that's pretty much the universal one, though, where, you know, that's why Ray Rice is probably never going to play again.
Yeah, well, he may never play again, but he's going to have a job at the organization, though.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. The text message that Steve Piscotty sent him was saying that there's going to be an ambassador job waiting for you. But let's face it. I mean, it's the Baltimore Ravens. This is the same organization, and the ability to kind of cover my own ass because I don't want to get hit with anything liable. They built a statue this year for an alleged murderer who allegedly murdered two people and allegedly had blood on an alleged white tuxedo back in 2000. Oh, and he used an alleged knife. That's the other thing, too. So everything is alleged with Ray Lewis. But it does not surprise me. I mean, Jamal Lewis kicked the crap out of his wife back in 2004, ended up going to jail for 3 months. And that's a new thing, too, right? Going to jail for domestic abuse? Holy crap. You know, and again, Jamal Lewis played running back, too, which I'm going to get to something in a second with that. But this is an organization that has spotty, you know, behavioral. Dante Stallworth got drunk behind the wheel, former Patriot, Dante Stallworth, and killed a guy and had to pay him 10 grand, was still out there for the Ravens at the time. You know, he spent some time in jail. He spent, what, 20, 30 days or something like that in jail? And, yeah, the Ravens organization's been terrible with that. Ozzie Newsom's been terrible. I guess the only thing about that report is that it actually puts Harbaugh in a little bit of a good light, where he could actually be that person that they can look at and say, okay, this guy can kind of redeem this organization a little bit because he wanted to cut Ray Rice in February as soon as he heard about it.
That was another interesting part of that report was that Harbaugh wanted to cut him right away. And that makes him look the best out of everybody, which makes you wonder, like, what was going on with the front office and why they didn't really listen to their coach.
Right. Now, Harbaugh, it comes off probably as one of the two biggest blowhards in the NFL, then next to his own brother, may I say. And, you know, that Super Bowl that happened, it was just a nightmare to watch because I think everyone knew Ray Lewis was going to win the Super Bowl and go off in the sunset, regardless of all that. And, I mean, there's certain theories that you can get to about that and say, you know, the NFL favored the Ravens, all this other stuff. But here's the truth about it, that it actually makes him seem like a legitimately solid human being, while it makes Ozzie Newsome and Steve Piscotty look like absolute assholes. And it's gonna cause a lot of problems. Now, if Steve Piscotty is the guy who's pretty much running the show there and is the de facto owner of the Ravens, this brings up another interesting point. So, and I know we weren't necessarily going to talk about the NBA, but it kind of delves into this. What's more important in American society? Is it a owner that has racist remarks, or is it a de facto owner that promotes endless domestic abuse? I mean, wouldn't one I'm not saying that one is better than the other, and that's my point. If someone is actually causing the issue and, you know, not doing anything to stop that bad behavior, why won't the NFL have the Ravens sell the team? Yeah. You kick out one owner in one organization, why can't you kick out the other in the NFL? Fire Ozzie Newsome, you know, don't take him out of the Hall of Fame or anything, but, you know, just kind of make it almost impossible for him to get a job within the next 5 years. I mean, the NCAA is a show cause clause for anyone that breaks the rules. Why can't you have that in the NFL?
Yeah, and, you know, it's just, you know, the NFL, you know, needs to just get their, they need to get their stuff in order. I mean, this report doesn't make the Ravens organization seem very favorable for the rest of the league.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, there's at least a faction of the country that, you know, understands Adrian Peterson a lot. I mean, if I had a kid, I probably would not hit him with a tree branch because I don't believe in that. I believe that borderline child abuse right there. And here's the thing. His intent was to kind of instill something that he was growing up with, right? I mean, his mother's come out, his brother's come out and said they got their quote-unquote whoopings. The intent for Ray Rice was to kick the crap out of his wife in an elevator. And the intent for Jonathan Dwyer was to make his wife pay for not having sex with her. There's intent involved in everything. Now, I don't know if Jonathan Dwyer intentionally hurt his 18-month-old by throwing a shoe at him, but I'm pretty sure that might have had something to play with here. That's more domestic abuse, I think. But, you know, again, that's up to the courts to decide, and hopefully everything works out for everyone involved. Everyone learns from it, and I believe in second chances, but, you know, some of these guys, like Dwyer, for instance, this is about his third chance. He should be done. He should be gone from the league. He's nothing more than a backup, and he's had a few chances in this league, and it's a privilege to play in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a big name. He made a little name for himself in Pittsburgh, but, I mean, is anybody, like, let's take a look at it from, like, the fantasy football perspective, and I know this will play a role in my argument. It's just, like, do you see anybody freaking out over Jonathan Dwyer getting arrested and being suspended from the Cardinals? No.
Absolutely
but
not.
Everyone's freaking out about, you know, Adrian Peterson, and I saw a couple of people on Facebook, a couple of friends of mine, that were freaking out trying to get a good running back to replace AP. I mean, is that what it's come to in the NFL?
In terms of just promoting fantasy over regular? I mean, if that was the case, then I think they would have gone to greater lengths to cover up Peterson. Now, that brings me to another point, too. If Goodell wasn't so far under fire, would the Peterson story have come out? I don't know, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's got to be that point where if you're making $44 million to run a league and handle CBA negotiations and handle all the punishment, I don't understand where that money is going. I guess $44 million doesn't go as far as it used to.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that one.
But hopefully everything works out. You know, the Wes Welker suspension got overturned. Skandrick's suspension got overturned. Deion Jordan was hit with an additional four games because even though the suspension was going to get overturned, he screwed up again. We'll see. We will see on that.
Yeah,
now,
I think that. You know, before we move on, I think it's highly convenient that Welker's suspension got overturned just in time for the Seattle game. I don't want to bring up any conspiracy theories or anything, but I just think it's a little interesting that his suspension got overturned just in time for what's probably the most anticipated game of the regular season.
Right, yeah, I think that's pretty evident, too. The ESPN network is once again the Manziel, Manning, LeBron, SEC network. So you have to think of it from that terms that they probably wanted to make the forehead happy. And that's probably that. I mean, I've also, you know, felt that they have severely overrated Manning over the years. I mean, let's face it, too. I mean, the guy's not necessarily the most clutch quarterback in the world. I think he's still – or does he still have a losing record, or is it 500 in the playoffs? It might actually be one game over 500 now. I'm not 100%.
Yeah, I think he's – oh, boy, it's either 12-11 or 13-12. But I think I think you're right. I think he's just a game over 500.
Awful. Just awful. I mean, I would put Brady over him easy. And that's not me being a homer. But I would put Brady over him. I would put Montana over him. Aikman over him. You know, I don't even want to go to the F word. I don't even want to bring him up. But maybe him as well. I mean, I would actually say that Brett Favre's parallels Peyton Manning quite a bit.
Ooh.
If you think
Chris, you're pushing it with that one.
Well, let me explain here. Let me explain. So you have two guys that have absolutely dominated regular season. All these records, everything. So, you mean both guys could not get it done in the playoffs. I mean, you look back at Favre's real final season when he was at the Minnesota Vikings, right? So that game against New Orleans, Favre almost pretty much had it in hand. Then what ended up happening? Favre tried to get too cute, tried to throw, throws in these little windows like you did 10 years beforehand, and what happened? Pick, 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 and the rest is history. New Orleans went on to beat who in the Super Bowl that year?
Peyton Manning.
Absolutely. So I think... it's all about the psyche in a quarterback, too. I don't know what it is about his aversion to big games. The debacle in the Super Bowl last year, you can't necessarily blame that all on Manning, mind you. He didn't help.
There's no question about it. And I think it's interesting when people make the argument that Manning, you know, has won a Super Bowl. He played the Bears in that Super Bowl, and the Bears had absolutely nothing. So I mean, it wasn't even a fair matchup for Manning and the Colts that year. But when he's gone up against, you know, legitimate defenses like New Orleans, he played so poorly, and on that, you know, on the drive in the fourth quarter, you know, towards the end of the fourth quarter, the Colts are down by four. And then he throws the pick to Porter, I think it was, and Porter
yeah, something like that.
And then he gets completely outmatched and outclassed by the Seahawks last year. I mean, you have to really wonder, like, if and when he goes up against legitimate talent, like, how he responds.
Well, I remember when the Patriots had that little dynasty. You remember who Peyton Manning's favorite receiver in the playoffs was, right?
His
favorite receiver
that
in the playoffs was Ty Law.
Yeah.
He would love hitting Ty Law for those interceptions.
Oh, and Ty Law was. Yeah, Ty Law was very happy to take the gifts that Manning gave him too. So.
Which, by the way, if Ty Law never makes the Hall of Fame, there's something wrong there. I know he's eligible this year. Hopefully he gets in. I don't think they're going to put him in this year. I think they're going to make him wait a year or two, but he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. You know, he was part of all three of those teams, so there's no reason why he shouldn't be in there.
Yeah, and plus he was probably at that time the best corner in the league. Now, I think we have talked enough about the NFL. Your passion is hockey, so I'll let you take it from there on hockey. You know, it's probably about a good month before the season begins, but, you know, a lot of teams have done nothing. Bruins, they've done absolutely nothing. There's a bunch of teams, though, that have completely overpaid for talent, and it's just shocking.
Yeah, you know, it really is, and, you know, I talked about this on my other show that I co-host on Sports Ranch Radio every Monday and Thursday nights called Slicks and Sticks, and we've spent the two shows this week talking about the best free agent signings and the worst free agent signings, and we could have done probably 2 to 3 weeks of shows on terrible free agent contracts. There's just way too many of them. Players being overpaid, players getting too many long-term deals. I mean, it's just ridiculous how much,
right,
like, what these players are getting paid, especially this offseason. When you see people like Benoit Pouliot who have done absolutely nothing in this league get 5 years and $20 million from the Oilers, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, the Oilers are showing why exactly they are the Oilers. And they had that run when they were Messier and Gretzky's Oilers where they were a very, very, very great team. We actually have a caller coming in.
Oh, caller, excellent. Bring him on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. How you guys doing?
Good. We're good.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Before we get started, when does your program end? Like, approximately how long before it finishes?
Probably about 27 minutes.
Oh, okay. So basically only 27 more minutes for the boring fuck fest to go on, right?
That's good. Wow.
That was nice. Geez, not even a half an hour in, and we've already succeeded to bore people to death. Nice.
Yes. Very nice. Getting back to Pouliot.
Yeah, I mean, that contract is just ridiculous. It makes you wonder what the hell's happened to the Oilers since they lost the Cup Finals in 2006. It's just, they are such a, you know, dysfunctional franchise. They put way too much money in just nothing, and they're so desperate for defense. It's just, you know, so bad, but at least they're trying to shore up the back line. They started by getting Scrivens last season from L.A., so he's the clear number one over there. And then, you know, you sign former Devils defenseman Mark Fain, who should be a good guy on the blue line to have, and then you completely overpay for a guy that was a former fourth-round pick and hasn't done anything in the league. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
and that's very true. I remember him when he played on the Bruins, mind you, and the guy was no more than a fourth liner. I don't understand that at all.
Well, you know what? He got paid for pretty much being impressive in the playoffs last year. Because the Rangers made the run to the Cup Finals, I think, you know, Edmonton must have been watching the games and seeing how good of a, you know, a defensive forward he is. But he was drafted for his offense, though, hasn't performed offensively. So now you're going to pay a guy $4 million a year for the next 5 years just to possess the puck and forecheck well. I mean, that's not how the NHL works.
No, I agree with that. Now, what about the Iginla signing? What do you think about that?
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that. I actually managed to piss off a few Avs fans with that when I said that that was one of my worst deals. But, I mean, when you look at it, the guy signed a contract last year, an incentive-laden deal with the Bruins, that if he hit his incentives, he could make $6 million last year. He hit all the incentives. He collected the whole thing, and then he looked out there for, you know, the best deal he could find, and he got, you know, $60 million for the next 3 years of Colorado. Now, on the surface, you got to be thinking, well, you know, it's going to be good to have him there. He's a good veteran leader on a young team that got upset and could use more experience and everything. But that's great, but you're not going to pay a guy an average of $5.33 million for the next 3 years just for him to provide leadership. I mean, the guy's got to perform. He had a 30-goal season last year with Boston, and, you know, with the talent he's playing with this year, I mean, probably a good bet for 25 to 30 goals, but it's all about what he does in the playoffs. During the playoffs last year for the Bruins against the Canadiens, that whole top line was absolutely quiet. They couldn't create anything. And, you know, the Gill is not getting...
When he was in Pittsburgh, too, that the playoff even the year before. When they played the Bruins, what did he do? He was supposed to be a big, bad goal scorer, and he did nothing.
No, I mean, he did absolutely nothing. And that's my point. For a guy that's so decorated in the league, and he's gonna be a Hall of Famer. There's not much doubt about it. But the guy's been in the league for so long, and he hasn't won anything. He's made one Cup final back in 2004, and you know you would think that he would go to the best team that has a chance at a Stanley Cup, but he's going to a team that I don't think is going to contend for a title in the next 3 years because you know. Colorado's still got to look up to Chicago, L.A., and now St. Louis, I think, is better than two because of them signing Stastny, which I thought was a great deal for the Blues. So they've got to contend with three other teams that are arguably better than them. So I don't know in the next 3 years whether or not the Avs are going to contend for a championship with the talent they have to face in the postseason.
Now, the free agent signing that the most is Orpik. I mean, that does not make sense to me.
Oh, that's one I think a lot of people had was him because...
What is he making, 5 years, 28?
5 years at 27.5, and, you know, he's done... That deal is just bad on all...
We actually have another call.
Yeah, put him on.
Caller, you're on the air. Yep, and caller dropped.
Well, that's a shame. I was hoping we were going to get a better call than the first one we had.
Yeah, true. But we did actually have those technical difficulties at the beginning of the show. So, got to give us some credit there for at least getting this off the air. So,
with that being said,
go on with what you were talking about with Orpik.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying a guy that's 33 years old for the next five seasons who you claim is a defensive defenseman, yet without him on the ice, the Penguins actually scored more than they did with him on the ice, and their defensive statistics were actually worse with him on the ice, which is incredible. I put up a stat on our show Thursday night, it was, that when he was on the ice taking draws in the defensive zone, the Penguins were outshot 335-136. And if they were unblocked shots, his defensive line, the shots in favor of Pittsburgh was only 30%, which was actually worse than who was perceived as the worst defensive player in the NHL, and that's Captain Ovi over in Washington. I mean that's insane. Why are you gonna pay $5.5 million a year for the next 5 seasons for a guy that's just like a traffic cone? He's just not that good. He's not worth that kind of money.
I can agree with that. I mean, you could have looked at a lot of things with Washington and said, hey, we're going to spend this money and maybe upgrading behind the blue line, you know, maybe upgrade the goalie. I don't know about you, but I'm not really a fan of Holtby. Maybe, again, upgrade the blue line with them, but not in that way. Orpik's probably no more than a third-line defenseman, maybe a guy who gets scratched every few games. I don't get it.
No, he won't be. He won't be getting scratched.
Oh,
with that
no,
kind
he
of
won't
contract.
Be. But I'm just saying, in terms of his actual value, they're gonna hate that deal as soon as this year. Now, I mean, that's not even as bad as that's worse than the Horton deal. I mean, at least with Horton, you looked at his playoff stats and you said to yourself, maybe you can duplicate that. But no, the guy's just never healthy, and that's been the problem with Horton. But for a guy like Orpik, Washington is everything they get from that deal. And
yeah,
by me saying that, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, there's nothing good that can come out of that deal. I mean, I think after about 2 or 3 years, you're going to see rumblings down in Washington of them buying out Orpik's contract. I just don't think it's that good. They're gonna regret it, especially if they don't make any noise in the playoffs with him on the team.
I mean, what does that do to the young defensemen around the league in terms of restricted free agents and unrestricted free agents? They see a 33-year-old journeyman defenseman get that. They see Pouliot get the contract that he had. What does that do? I mean, I would think that just inflates everything.
Yeah, definitely, and, you know, never mind around the league. Look over here what's going on in Boston. I mean, you got the whole Johnny Boychuk saga. He's going to be a UFA after this season, and he's currently making a little over $3 million. And I guarantee you, for a guy like Boychuk, he's going to definitely be commanding at least $5 million on the open market. And he's
I would
a
think
much better
he'd be
player.
Looking for the Orpik deal at the very least.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And he's a better defensive player than Orpik is. So I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody pay maybe $6 million a year for Boychuk. I mean, he's 30 years old. He plays in a really – he plays very sound defense in a primarily defensive system. So players like him are going to be coveted around the league next offseason. But I think that, you know, I think that the Orpik deal is bad on all levels because it's going to drive up – it's good for the players because it drives up their value, but it's not good for the owners and the GMs that have to, you know, try to work with what they have and maybe dedicate a little more cap space to guys that they didn't want.
Right. Now, what other deals do you think were absolutely horrible this year? I remember Washington signed someone else to a contract that just scratched my head as well.
So I had Orpik, Pouliot, Iginla. I also had Dave Bolin too. That's another head scratcher for the Panthers in Florida. I mean, for a team that's losing all sorts of money, that they're throwing around 5 years and $27.5 million for Bolin, I think it was. I mean, you're paying a guy $5.5 million who actually makes the same amount of money as John Tavares does of the Islanders, yet Tavares
is
much, much more skilled player than Bolin ever will be. I mean, you're pretty much paying Boland to be a top six forward when, you know, he's just a solid two-way player. His game isn't really based around offense. It's more winning faceoffs and puck possession and being a clutch playoff performer. But you're going to pay a guy $5.5 million to be a playoff performer on a team that at best is fringe to make the playoffs? I mean, I think that's a horrible one, too.
Well, I expect that from the Panthers, though. I mean, this is the same team that just traded for Luongo, a guy who is a head case, can't do anything in the playoffs. Oh, and by the way, makes about, what, $8 million this year for the next seven years?
Something like that.
The next 6-7 years. I don't get some of these teams. The Florida Panthers aren't going to do anything for the next decade. That's probably the reason. They just don't know how to spend their money.
No, they really don't. And that's unfortunate because, you know, with all the fans that they have down there, it's a shame to see them spending all this money on players they really shouldn't be.
Well, I mean, you can say all the fans down here all you want, but I know for a fact, since I do live down here, I can go on StubHub the day before when, you know, the Penguins or Bruins come to town, get tickets for $2. They don't really have a fan following. I would love to see them get moved. I know that the NHL is planning expansion in Seattle, maybe Vegas, which is interesting, too. There might be a few other markets, Louisville, Kansas City. There was a few other ones that they were talking about as well. But I think the only two that were kind of set in stone were Quebec and Seattle.
Right, and I think Quebec is definitely ready for a team. I mean, they'll be ready when the arena is completed next year. And I think you're going to see Florida go there. I mean, you still have the conference imbalance, but for right now,
right,
it's probably the best move for the NHL to go to a proven hockey market instead of a floundering one in Florida.
The problem with that is that Gary Bettman's still the commissioner there. And as long as Bettman's actually the commissioner, I don't think he's going to give up on his southern expansion without a fight. I mean, you can look all the way down to the Phoenix Coyotes, or what are they called, the Arizona Coyotes this year. I don't even know what they're called anymore. I don't even know exactly where they're playing right now. But, I mean, everything's been in limbo with them for at least half a decade. And most sensible owners would have... They talk to the commissioner and have him actually move the team to a market that could actually be feasible for hockey, such as Quebec, which probably never should have lost their team. You know, at the time, the Thrashers are still in Atlanta, so Winnipeg would have been a market, and a sensible one, too, because they used to be the Jets. I remember they tried to move them to Hamilton. Didn't work out. The guy that owns Blackberry Rim wanted to buy them. Did not work out because Bettman wanted the team come hell or high water in Arizona. They're bleeding money.
Yeah, they're losing money, and the only problem is that, you know, they're not sensible to realize how much of a mistake it is. I mean, they've got to cut ties and cut base with what they have, and just they got to move on. Get it? Give Quebec a hockey team. Give it back to them. They're ready to go. You know, they've been waiting almost 20 years for the Nordiques to come back. Just give them what they want. They gave Winnipeg what they wanted, and now they should give Quebec what they want.
I'd love to see the Whalers back, but that isn't going to happen.
No, no way. That won't. That's never going to happen again. I mean, the Whalers have been gone for too long, and you've got the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Bruins all in that general area. So I'm sure by this point that former fans of the Whalers have hooked on to one of those teams.
Now, the Islanders bring up an interesting scenario. They're moving to Brooklyn next year. They said that they're going to keep their name, the Islanders. Then Charles Wine goes and sells the team. What do you think is going to happen with that name? Do you think they're going to just change it to Brooklyn? Do you think it's going to be a completely rebranded organization? Because, quite frankly, Charles Wang has turned that organization that was halfway decent back in the 80s into, well, let's just put them as the akin to the Cleveland Browns in the NFL. They're a joke.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Oilers are another the Islanders are another dysfunctional franchise here. What do I think with them? I mean, I think they'll keep the name for now, but eventually you're going to have to change it to something that reflects more of what Brooklyn's about, because Brooklyn isn't on Long Island.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to, I mean, they'll have to think of a new name that fits the franchise.
I'm just curious how the Barclays Center is actually going to be in terms of watching hockey. I know, obviously, with the NBA, I've been to the place before. It's actually not a bad place to watch a basketball game. But I'm hoping that they find a way, because the place where the Islanders are playing in, it was just a dump. It was terrible. And it's a good thing for probably the growth of the NHL to have a team in Brooklyn.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, that makes the rivalry with the Rangers that much more intense. Not like it wasn't intense enough as it is now, but, being maybe 10 to 15 minutes away from Madison Square Garden is going to make things a much, much more heated, considering they're so close to each other now. But, I think it's going to be good for them. I think the Islanders will definitely get a better attendance moving down there than that dump they have in Uniondale this year.
Yeah, well, that is the last hurrah of Uniondale, so that's another interesting theory there. Now, speaking of dumps, obviously we had to talk about the New Jersey Devils and where they play. Where do you foresee them playing in the next 5 years? Are they going to get a new stadium or what?
No, they just built the they built the Prudential Center down there, and I think they're going to be fine there for the next 5 years. It's right in downtown Newark. It's easy for fans to get to. I don't see them moving anywhere. I think the arena is fine as it is. It's just a problem of getting the fans to come out there, because they don't come out unless the team's in the playoffs.
Right. Which is probably the reason why the NFL has not gone back to Los Angeles. Although there are a few candidates to move to L.A. in the NFL. I mean, you got the Chargers, the Raiders, you got the Jaguars. You know, any of these teams that can't get on TV on Sunday because they can't sell out a game. It's kind of stunning, though, that a lot of people would consider L.A. at the same time, because they do have a lot of fair-weather fans. Probably come in the middle of the first quarter, leave by the end of the third, and the stands would be half empty in the fourth quarter. Kind of like what happened when the Rams were there.
Yeah, but if there's going to be a team that moves there, it's going to be Oakland. I mean, any of those other two that you mentioned, Jacksonville's obviously pretty bad, and I know there's rumors going around that they may go across the pond to London if they get an NFL team. But, the Oakland Raiders are the most sensible candidate for me, because the Raiders are just a terrible franchise. The Coliseum they play in there is so outdated. I mean, they've got to get themselves a new arena, or else they're going to be moving to L.A. fairly soon.
I agree with that. Now, we do only have 5 minutes left, so I did want to wrap up talking about baseball real quick. The most compelling story in baseball is probably the fact that the defending world champions are not looking like the world champions at all. In fact, they're probably in the conversation for a top five draft pick next year. What do you think happened?
In the offseason with the Red Sox?
What happened to that team? I mean, was it just lightning in a bottle with them, where they got hot at the right time and, the character won over talent and they ended up winning it all? Or, I don't understand what happened there. I know that A.J. Pierzynski gets a lot of the heat in Boston for the whole breakdown, but it can't be just him. It's got to be a lot of things. Pedroia's injury, it just has to be a lot of things that happened this year.
Yeah, it wasn't all Pierzynski's fault. I mean, I think last year the team got hot at the right time. They had a collection of players that, outplayed their own talents and abilities, and You know, they had a lot. They had a lot of good things go right for them. I thought it was kind of like destiny that they won the championship. But this year, they've just been, oh boy, they have been awful. I mean, they brought up all the young kids, and the young kids haven't performed as well as they'd hoped. And, you know, pretty much realistically by the middle of June, you know, the season was lost. So, you know, they've
been
just...
Well, which is kind of shocking to me because of the fact that if you go on any Red Sox blog or message board, the Red Sox have Ted Williams Jr., Pedro Martinez Jr., Roger Maris Jr. They've got Barry Bonds Jr. in that organization. They've got Cy Young Jr. I mean, they just overrate their prospects severely, and it's just ridiculous when you actually see someone come up. Now, Mookie Betts, he's been good. He's been all right. The rest of them, Bradley Jr., he's been awful. You know, just awful.
Yeah.
Now, you're going into the last weekend of the season, and you're playing against the Yankees. Who would have thought that this game would not have meant a damn thing? I mean, the only thing that means anything out of that home series, that final series, is two things. One, putting the Sox out of their misery and putting the fan base out of its misery and going into the offseason where they can have hopes and dreams about Mike Stanton. The second thing is just a goodbye to Derek Jeter, who is a future Hall of Famer, one of the greats. What's your favorite memory of Jeter?
Oh, boy. I would say probably the running catch he made when he went flying into the stands. I believe it was against – I could have sworn it was against the Red Sox.
It was against Boston.
Sure.
It was Boston. That was the infamous Nomar game where Nomar asked out of the game and got traded 3 days later. That was the infamous one.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that would be probably my best memory is that when he makes the catch in foul ground and goes abs, just Bobby Orr's into the stands and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that play pretty much represents Jeter's career in a nutshell. He's a hard, you know, hard-nosed player, dedicated player to that organization. I mean, the Yankees were lucky to have him for almost 20 years. I mean, Jeter's been a... He pretty much has been the face of that franchise since he came into the league.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, obviously we're wrapping up apparently in 90 seconds, but, you know, the homer in me wants to say all the fate in the face on the look on Jeter's face when the Sox finally beat them in 2004, that was classic. But I've also got to look at that 2004 series where the Sox were just killing them in Game 7. And everyone else looked dead. And Derek Jeter just would not give up. That guy would not give up. He personified toughness. He personified persistence. And he persevered. I mean, the guy is probably one of the best hitters in the game's ever seen. So hats off to him. You know, great career, first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, you have no argument for me. I agree with all of those things.
Yeah. So... this is our actual first sign-off. We're going to be here a little earlier next week, around the 4 p.m. Eastern time frame. And hopefully everything works out. I don't go into another elevator and, you know, get kind of nervous.
Yeah, no, shake off the rust, man. We'll be back. We'll be back again next week. We'll try to do a little better this time.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't like us, don't listen. Or better yet, listen. And then call in and complain so we at least have listeners.
Yeah. No, we take any and all callers, so.
Absolutely. Even the abusive ones. We love that. We love hecklers. So, for me and Joe, you know, have a great night. See you this time next week. And, you know, if you got any other questions, anything that you want to speak about, obviously call in at the number and, we'll answer any and all of your questions.
Yep, that sounds good to me, man.
No worries. Well, now have a good night, everyone, and see you next week.